This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I am your host, Tim Murray, as always, joined by Adam Burke here in the early week as we take a look at Adam's updated power ratings, maybe some letdown spots to keep an eye on, might take a venture into G5 land. No, we're not talking about whatever the hell is going on with the Pac-12 and the AAC and the Mountain West with realignment. No one cares from a betting standpoint, so we don't need a hit on that. I might add something to the futures portfolio as well as the show goes on. But where are my manners? Let me welcome in a man on Twitter at Skating Tripods, Adam Burke. You could read all his work over at VSiN.com. Mr. Burke, we got ourselves some dandies this week, and none bigger than Alabama hosting Georgia. And I heard Stuckey over the Action Network mention that this is the first time that Georgia will visit Alabama with fans since 2007.
You know, I thought when you said dandies, we were going to talk about Buffalo and UConn, but I guess not. Maybe we'll
Buffalo
save that.
Buffalo letdown spot off of the big NIU victory?
I don't know. UConn letdown spot after winning by 900 over FAU? I don't know. But we'll get to that a little bit later on in the program. Yeah, good to be here. Good to have a really marquee game here, like a Georgia and Alabama. I mean, I understand why these two teams aren't really scheduled to play each other, because in the pre-expanded playoff era, you wouldn't want one of these two teams to give themselves a loss. But now with 12 teams, what the hell? Let's go ahead and see what they both got.
Yeah, I'm fired up for this one. It is the first time since 2007 that Alabama has been a home underdog. And right now, as we record this on a Tuesday, Alabama currently sitting at around a 1.5, 2-point dog at home. It was interesting to note that Circa actually put up the line a little early this past week because both teams were coming off a bye. So prime time down there in Tuscaloosa, Georgia coming off of, we'll call it a lackluster performance against Kentucky. And that now Kalen DeBoer gets tested for the first time as the head coach of Alabama. But before we move forward, we must look back. And right now on VSiN.com, you have, of course, can read Adam's article on his updated power ratings. And let's jump right into your updated power ratings. A lot of movement. And before we get to my mids getting it done outright, baby, against Memphis in a great spot. So thank you for making me sound a little bit smart, unlike some other institutions that will leave nameless. How about BYU, man? What do we make of this BYU team? Because they go out, I don't want to call it fluky, but it was a bizarre game. They win comfortably, but they had a scoop and score. They had a punt return for a touchdown that immediately led to the punt returner vomiting all over the place, +3 in turnover margin. But the Cougs are 4-0, man. What did you do with BYU?
Yeah, I gave BYU a 4-point bump here this week. Look, I don't really know what to make of this team. I don't know if they're really all that good. But what I do know is that I have to give them a little bit of market respect because of what they've done here so far this season. You know, they've won some games that I didn't really expect them to, including here this past week. But as you mentioned, I mean, +3 in turnover margin, had the fumble return, had the punt return. You know, BYU, they only ran 48 plays in that game. But in fairness, they had 5.6 yards per play. So they did move the football pretty effectively when they had it. They just didn't have it a whole lot. So I gave them a 4-point bump. It was the second largest bump of the week here for me.
All right, let's get to the team that you gave the biggest bump to. And I mentioned them, the Navy midshipmen, and they might have something here. We've seen Navy at their peak when they have a very good quarterback, whether it was Malcolm Perry or Keenan Reynolds or, hell, even Will Worth stepping in the year that I was the studio host there in 2016. They have found ways to really ratchet it up. When they've got a good quarterback, things can hum for the midshipmen. And when they don't, they struggle. And we've seen that the last handful of years. But they go out there on Saturday afternoon and they put it to Memphis. And it was interesting because I was watching this game. Memphis wins the coin toss. They go right down and they score. I think the live line went to around 13.5 or so. I didn't grab it because I was fortunate enough to get the double digits all week. But then Navy went out there, and boy, this new offense with a couple wrinkles is very impressive. Blake Horvath has done a phenomenal job as their quarterback. Drew Kronick, their new offensive coordinator, the former head coach of Mercer. So I know you've upgraded this midshipman squad quite a bit here after their impressive win as a home dog on Saturday.
Yeah, so this is one of those where I just had this line dead wrong. I mean, it was completely wrong. And even if I did a little bit of mental gymnastics in terms of, you know, lowering my spread because of the limited number of possessions and Service Academy games, stuff like that, my line was still way off in this game. And from the looks of it, I didn't upgrade Navy enough because my line here for Navy's game this week is a little bit short as well. But I did give them a 5-point bump. Based off of, you know, really their whole body of work, but especially last week with what they did in that game and also the market correction. And like I said, I'm still a little bit short, so I'm going to have to bump this team probably 3 or 4 more points going into next week. And I will say this, just generally speaking, for whatever reason, I struggle to power rate the Service Academies. I think maybe it's just the style of play. You know, it's a little bit difficult to kind of analyze some of their games because they'll run the ball 70 times for 300 yards, you know, stuff like that. I tend to be chasing the Service Academy ratings throughout the course of the season. That's nothing new for me. And it seems like I was very, very off on Navy going into last week, and I'm apparently still off on them a little bit going into this week.
Look, this is a weird spot this week, and, you know, I like my situations, and I, you know, once again, I'm not going to pat myself on the back too much because I also bet Oklahoma this past weekend, and I don't know how they only lost by 10 points, but Navy, this spot was so great for them coming off the bye, Memphis coming off the Florida State win. I'm having a tough time with this week's game because they go on the road to UAB and UAB's coming off a bye, and then they play Air Force next week, which is, we all know, it's the second most important game of the entire season. Army is always going to be the most important, but you want to try to get the Commander-in-Chief trophy, and they have not received the Commander-in-Chief trophy, I want to say, since 2019 was the last time they got it with Malcolm Perry as their starting quarterback, if I remember correctly. So, you know, this is a monster spot here for UAB. That said, am I really going to trust Trent Dilfer and his staff to be properly prepared for the triple option? I don't know. So UAB catching 3.5, certainly a situational angle that I think is interesting. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, being on you know, target with the market here. Circa did open this game, I believe, pick. So it's not like, you know, odds makers really know what to do with this Navy team too. So at 3.5, I'm looking long and hard at this UAB team. But then again, you look back at week 2 and UAB got absolutely obliterated by UL Monroe. I know that was, as you pointed out, that was the Vincent game.
The Bryant Vincent game.
So I have not bet this yet. It would be UAB or pass, but I just don't know if I can trust Trent Dilfer, even if they're coming off a bye.
You know, honestly, the more I think about that game, and I have UAB a 0.5-point favorite, which speaks to exactly what I mentioned, that I'll probably need to bump Navy a little bit more going into next week. I don't like playing overs in Service Academy games, and this is a very, very high total.
Yep.
But Navy's offense looks pretty efficient. And speaking of efficient, Jacob Zeno, the quarterback for UAB, this is a kid who completed 73.6% of his passes last year, about 71% this year. He does have an interception problem. He's got 12 of them over the last season and a quarter. But that's a kid that completes a lot of passes. And when you talk about the limited number of offensive possessions in a game, if you can be efficient and complete over 70% of your passes against a Service Academy, who's typically undersized, typically not that good on the defensive side of the ball, again, it's a very high total for a game that could have, you know, a back-breaking 10-minute long Navy drive. But I'm kind of intrigued a little bit here by the over 57, and the market seems to be as well.
Yeah, and once again, I mean, Navy, this is a newer Navy where they're throwing the ball. They're not going to be ever throwing the ball 50 times a game, but Blake Horvath threw it 12 times against Memphis with a ton of success. 9 for 12, 192 yards, 2 touchdowns. And speaking of Blake Horvath, how about 12 carries, 211 yards, 4 touchdowns? So the mids could be back, but weird spot this week on the road at UAB with Air Force looming there the following week. All right, let's keep it rolling with the positivity here. We've got good vibes this week. And let's go to Texas Tech. This is a team that has been hard for me to gauge this year. Very fortunate to beat Abilene Christian week 1. They go to the Palouse and get smoked in week 2. And then I can't remember if they're, you know, the market here. I think the market bet Texas Tech like crazy against North Texas, and they were absolutely spot on as they went out and pulverized North Texas. And they followed it up by beating an Arizona State team that, you know, was undefeated and looked pretty impressive in the non-con. So Texas Tech getting healthier, Taj Brooks back after missing the week two game, you know, Baron Morton still, you know, slinging it a bit there. What have you done with Joey McGuire's squad?
Yeah, this is a tricky team to try and gauge, because, you know, that game that looks like a really, really bad data point against Washington State where they lost by 21, Texas Tech had 491 yards of offense in that game. Now, again, they ran 87 plays and they threw the ball 60 times. So, yeah, you're going to have some yardage when you wind up doing that. But still, I mean, that's 5.6 yards per play. That's not a terrible showing on the road, although they were trailing throughout the second half. Game State kind of played a bit of a part there. And then last week against Arizona State, you know, they won 30-22. But once again, they ran 80 plays. They only had 337 yards of offense. So I did give them a 3.5-point bump, because it does seem like the market is kind of in favor of this team to some degree. I don't know that the body of work necessarily supports it. So this is one that I kind of gave some market respect to and made a market correction. But I don't know really what Texas Tech is long term here. And again, keep in mind, yeah, they're putting up some points and putting up some yardage, but they're also throwing the ball a million times a game.
Let's get to Miami. Miami now in the top 10, the favorite to win the ACC. And last weekend against South Florida, I thought this would be a tricky spot. I ultimately didn't get to the window on it, thankfully. One of the good decisions I made last weekend, because the number 17 dipped down a little bit to 16. South Florida at home, maybe a little bit of a look-ahead spot to Virginia Tech on a Friday night. And the second half was just pure domination by Miami. Cam Ward continues to be an absolute superstar. You know, 24 of 34, 400 plus yards through the air, 3 touchdowns, ran for 43 yards. Byron Brown, who's a super athletic quarterback, never really got it going last week for the Bulls. So, you know, this was a game at the half, and then it wasn't quickly. So you look at the games that Miami has played against FBS competition: Florida 41-17, Ball State 62-0, and then South Florida 50-15. And the market right now is betting on Miami again this week as if they know the outcome. And this was right around 17 to open the week. And I see South Point as high as 20 right now with Miami. So we'll see if this gets all the way to 3 full touchdowns. But it feels like we're trying to catch up a little bit with Miami. And I know all of us are thinking, yeah, but they're going to lay a turd in the punch bowl at some point, aren't they?
Well, you would certainly think so. I mean, I'll say this. My line's 16.5 now, and I gave Miami a 3-point bump for this week. So, you know, I guess I'm still chasing them a little bit as well, like you said. And I gave Virginia Tech a 3-point downgrade. So a 6-point swing for me from where this line would have been last week. And it's still, you know, 3.5 points short based on that South Point number. Look, there's a couple of things in play here. The first is exactly what you said, right? We all know that Mario Cristobal is not a very good head coach. Miami is going to lose a game that they shouldn't at some point in time. Will it be in the Friday night spotlight against Virginia Tech? It certainly shouldn't be. And also, I think Miami is really interesting this week because you're trying to push Cam Ward into the Heisman. And, you know, he's a guy who's obviously up there on the board and among the favorites, or even has been the favorite. Spotlight game, Friday night, chance for him to put up some big numbers. There's no doubt that they want to show well here in this game, to be sure. That said, I mean, Florida sucks. Florida A&M's a nobody. Ball State, glad they covered last week for me against Central Michigan, but they're not any good. South Florida's a pretty impressive win in some respects, but I think people are going to kind of look at this Miami team and say, well, they haven't played anybody yet. And I would say, well, Tennessee hadn't played anybody yet, and they looked pretty damn good against Oklahoma. Maybe Miami is just really good. So 3-point bump for me, but at the same time, it looks as though I'm still a little bit short on this team, given where my number is. So, hey, if they go out there and pummel Virginia Tech, a Virginia Tech team that a lot of people thought was pretty good coming into the year and hasn't really shown to be yet, another big upgrade for them coming next week in my power ratings.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, you know, I mentioned it with the Oklahoma game against Tennessee earlier in the season, Texas and Michigan. We're wondering, is the market gone too far? The public is laying these numbers with road chalk, and they're coming home, you know, to tip your cap. Obviously, it didn't get there with USC and Michigan, but Virginia Tech, you know, Adam, you look at how this season has gone for them. They open up the year with a loss to Vanderbilt. They lose last weekend to Rutgers. This is a team that had all these lofty expectations with some of the most returning production in the country, and now they find themselves with 2 losses heading into a showdown against Miami, where I do wonder if this is maybe a buy low spot, a hold on to your butt situation. But Virginia Tech intrigues me a little bit, but I'm going to let the betting public keep betting on Miami. Maybe I'll end up on the wrong side like I did week one with Florida, but Virginia Tech in this spot, they'll have some fans in the crowd there. I'm curious to see Miami, but they've been really, really impressive so far this year, and they deserve all the kudos.
So a couple other teams, Louisiana, South Alabama, a couple big bumps for me, 3.5 and 3 points respectively. Temple, I gave them a 3-point bump too. But I want to circle back to a game that you just alluded to, Michigan and USC. So I gave Michigan only a 1.5-point bump in my power ratings. It's a nice win, and there was Michigan money throughout the week. I mean, Michigan took money all week long. That money wound up being very, very right. Tim, they passed for 32 yards. Now, maybe that says more about USC, or maybe that says more about the Michigan defense, but they threw for 32 yards. Alex Orji cannot throw forward passes. Like, what the hell are we supposed to think of this Michigan team going forward, where that's a really good win on the surface, but I still don't know if this team is any good.
Well, we saw a little bit of money come in on Minnesota as that number is down to 9. I took a little 10 earlier this week, and I'm not going to, get too angry because someone on this podcast had Baylor as a best bet, and that was not me. It was Mr. Human. So I can't get too mad about a bad beat, but I don't know how that game went over on Saturday. You had a pick six. Why are you throwing Will Johnson's way at all is beyond me, as he stepped in and ran that one back. You had that weird ass play where Michigan gets the turnover, and then the big offensive lineman decides he's, shades of Desmond Howard, I guess, and he's going to run it back to the house, and he gets stripped. USC flips that around. And then, I had an issue with it. I don't know, others maybe didn't, but USC has the ball. It's 20-17, and there's 5 minutes to go. And I know some of these passes were low risk passes, but they had two passes go incomplete. And I'm thinking to myself, Michigan has proven that they cannot do anything offensively. They had not gained a first down the entire second half. USC's up 24-20, run three plays, punt the ball away. And ultimately, I know USC needs to make that tackle in the hole, and Mullings is an absolute monster, but I just thought about Lincoln Riley. Why are you even throwing the ball? Run the ball twice. If you can't get a first down, they're not going to be able to do anything, bleed the clock as much as possible. But, man, USC's got to be kicking themselves big time. I mean, they stuffed Mullings in that hole, and somehow he broke, 35 tackles. But to your point, I don't know what to do with Michigan, because the defense is the real deal. There's no doubt about it. But I'm looking at the schedule, and I'm thinking, when you're going to play – this way and just run the ball, I feel like you're going to get picked off more than once. I mean, they have Oregon, they have Ohio State left where they'll be underdogs, but I'm really curious about this weekend against Minnesota, where I took some 10 because it feels like it's just going to be a low scoring game every week with Michigan.
So I have Michigan 10-point favorite this week, so pretty close to market. I have a 3-point favorite at Washington next week, which is a game that I definitely think they could lose. I mean, obviously my line kind of implies that's very much a possibility, but even as bad as Washington has looked, or at least as underwhelming as Washington has looked, I think Michigan could lose that game. I think they could lose at Illinois. I wouldn't be totally surprised with that. I have them a 5-point favorite in that game. I have my dog to Indiana now as well, where Kurt Cignetti, I mean, that may be his signature win of the year, to go out there and beat a blue blood program like Michigan. And I still have my 3-touchdown dog against Ohio State. So I think there's at least maybe 4 games they could still lose. And I wouldn't be shocked if they lose, 3 or 4 of them.
Yeah. But the defense is the real deal. No doubt about it. All right, let's get to stock down, and we'll start with Mississippi State. As you said, and I share the same sentiment, good Lord, things are bad in Stark Vegas. Yeah, this has got to be one of the worst non-Vanderbilt SEC teams we've seen in quite some time. And just to go to show you, Texas is a 38.5-point favorite this week against Mississippi State. Mississippi State playing Florida last week as a home dog. The market was braver than me. They bet Florida, and they were right. What do we do with the Cowbells? Because they stink out loud.
They are they're not good, Tim. They are quite bad. And as I also wrote in my article, like, I would have loved to hear a Mike Leach press conference about this team. Like, it would have been fascinating to hear, because he was a very, very direct quote, to say the least. He wouldn't have had a team this bad, so there is that. But man, I look, first year head coach, you know, you're trying to change some things there with Jeff Lebby. You go away from Zach Arnett. Maybe some of the players weren't too thrilled that Arnett didn't really get that long of a leash, taking over under some very, very difficult circumstances, to say the least. But this is not a good football team at all whatsoever. I mean, you know, to get blown out by Toledo, like, Toledo's a pretty good MAC team. Maybe Toledo, you know, just had things kind of fall their way. To get smoked at home by a Florida team that probably could have fired Billy Napier every week this season is astonishing. And now you get Texas, Georgia, Texas A&M. Good luck, boys. I'm probably not done downgrading this team. I downgraded them 4.5 points this week.
So another team that I think many of us, the collective we, were hoping that this would be the spot that they knock off Liberty. Not feeling as confident as maybe we once did, because Appalachian State got absolutely hammered last week by South Alabama. And you could say it was a look-ahead spot. It's a conference game that they lost by 34 points to South Alabama. They were fortunate to beat East Carolina. They got destroyed by Clemson, which maybe doesn't look as bad. So the boys from Boone, they've got a big opportunity. I'm sure it's going to be a great crowd. Liberty has not looked flawless by any stretch of the imagination. Anyone who had ECU like I did over the weekend, that was a pretty tough beat to swallow there, as Liberty scored a late touchdown to get the cover, as well as push that game over the total. I don't know what to make of Liberty. I don't think they're nearly as good as they were last year. That said, Appalachian State has looked very, very vulnerable. At home, this was a spot that I had circled early on in the year. Haven't gotten to the window yet. App State catching 3.5. What have you done with their power rating?
Yeah, this is a real tricky game. I give them a 4-point drop, so I would have had them favored here this week against Liberty with how the Flames have looked so far this season. But with a 4-point drop, I now have App State plus 1.5 at home. So going to have to think about this one, because it kind of, and this is just such a narrative handicap and not something that I'm super comfortable with doing, but does it just feel like App State's going to win this game?
Kind
right?
Of
like they look awful last week, just positively awful. And hey, maybe South Alabama is a lot better than at least I expected. I wanted to fade the hell out of that team coming into the year. It worked to a degree. I mean, it certainly worked in week one when I had North Texas and sprinkled the money line. But South Alabama's offense, I mean, Major Applewhite's got them going in the right direction. So maybe they're just better this season. But what a god-awful performance from App State in that one. And, you know, look, I mean, Joey Aguilar is still really good. But the problem for App State right now, they cannot run the football. They are really struggling to run the ball. Now, Nate Noel is running all over the place for, where's he at, Arkansas?
Missouri,
maybe Missouri. There you go, Missouri. But the guys who were left here, I mean, they've done nothing. Aguilar has not completed a ton of passes. Teams are kind of daring App State to run the football, which is not at all what we would expect from this Mountaineers offense. So I don't know. We'll see if they can figure it out against the fighting Jamie Chadwells. But it feels like App State wins this game, or they get blown out again.
Yeah, knowing myself, I'll probably get to the window with App State. You mentioned Nate Noel and Missouri needed overtime to beat Vanderbilt. A very good spot for the Doors off of a ugly loss to Georgia State. And the market came in a little bit on Vanderbilt. That was a no sweat winner. Anyone who took the points there with Vanderbilt, Missouri sneaks out with the victory. They've got a bye week, and then they go to Texas A&M. I don't know what to make of this Missouri team, because it felt like everyone was penciling them in to 10 wins, and certainly they may get there. But I look at the schedule, it's not daunting, but there are a couple landmines. You got to go to College Station next week. You got to go to Alabama. You host Oklahoma at South Carolina. Won't be a walk in the park. I've got my questions about this Missouri team. Last 2 weeks, they were significant favorites, double digits against Boston College, win, don't cover. Double digits against Vanderbilt, needed overtime to win that game, obviously did not cover. What have you done with the Tigers after four games?
Yeah, I think this is a tough team to figure out, as you mentioned. I mean, I gave them a 4-point drop here. I think I just simply had them too high coming into the season. So a little bit of a market correction, a little bit of a body of work correction as well. Also, it's kind of tricky because you know, defensively, when you look at them here, there people are going to say, well, look, they're seventh in total defense. You know, they're a team that's 14th in yards per play allowed. But keep in mind, in their one game against an FCS opponent, they allowed 1.7 yards per play. They allowed 85 total yards. So that kind of skews the numbers a little bit here, where against Power 5 teams, they've allowed 5.5 yards per play and have only gained 5.9. So they're still on the plus side in yards per play differential, but not in any sort of impressive fashion. There was definitely some turnover on both sides of the ball. Of course, also they had to replace their defensive coordinator and did so with Corey Batune from South Alabama, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to be against the Jaguars this season. But Missouri just isn't as good as I thought they would be, and I don't think they're as good as the market thought they would be either. So 4-point drop for them. That said, I think they still have a good coaching staff. They still have a very experienced quarterback in Brady Cook. Maybe this is a team that just catches the bye week at the right time, and maybe they look different as we head into October.
All right, I want to get to a game that opened a lot of eyes, and mentioned South Point already. They put up interesting markets on game days, which is highest scoring FBS team, and FBS versus FCS games aren't a part of it. James Madison was 500-1 to be the highest scoring FBS team last weekend, and they accomplished that feat, putting up 70 on North Carolina. They led 53-21 at the half. That said, what do we do with North Carolina? And is this a spot this weekend where the market is going to look at what just happened last week with North Carolina giving up 70 to JMU and is going to overreact to it? We saw this number get as high as 3 in favor of Duke. I haven't bet this game yet, but it's kind of screaming my name that this is an overreaction. Do we buy low on UNC here? You wrote up this conference for our VSiN betting guide. What do you make of UNC? What did you do with them? And is this a spot to maybe back them on the road, air quotes, against Duke?
Man, I don't know what to make of any of this, to be honest with you. I mean, James Madison, they had 30 points against Charlotte. Charlotte's awful. 13-6 win over Gardner-Webb. And then they go out there and hang a 70-burger on North Carolina, maybe the most successful bye week of all time, at least from an offensive standpoint. Yet they also gave up 50 points. Now, of course, part of that was, you know, game state, second half, North Carolina just kind of throwing James Madison, playing soft coverage, all those kinds of things. But yeah, I mean, just a ridiculous offensive performance from James Madison, and nothing fluky about it whatsoever either. I mean, both of those teams had over 600 yards in that game. I think the question with North Carolina, and this is a team I bet their alt season win total over 8.5, took a long shot price on them to win the ACC, which is still maybe plausible given how that conference looks so far. But I think in this game specifically, you have to ask yourself, what do you think of Duke? So Duke beats Elon. All right, whatever. They go on the road and beat Northwestern in a game where I took Northwestern. That was one that, you know, was kind of hanging in the balance throughout. Duke wins it in double overtime. UConn, who blew out Florida Atlantic last week, 48-14. Is that a decent win for the Blue Devils now? I guess it could be. And then last week, they pummeled Middle Tennessee, a team that I've been dropping like a rock in my power ratings and have faded multiple times. Like, I don't know what Duke is yet. Are they 4-0? Yeah, sure, they are. But they scored 26 points, exactly 26 points, in each of their first three games before blowing out a Middle Tennessee team that was just going in the wrong direction. North Carolina is a pretty big step up here, I think. So it's a very difficult game. I have the line Duke minus 1.5. If there's any way that this thing gets over 3, I don't think that it does. I think 3 is kind of the stopping point. If it gets to 3.5, I'll hold my nose and take North Carolina. But for now, I don't think I can play this game.
To check out all of Adam's power rating adjustments, as well as some early thoughts on week 5 games, head on over to vsin.com. I have a Duke ACC win total under, and I'm happy I bet it that way, Adam, because I was looking at that non-conference schedule and I said, it could go 4-0 here. So thankfully, laid off of the under 5.5, went under 2.5 for the conference win total. But I need North Carolina to get this win for me. And I do kind of like the Tar Heels here, coming off of the absolute stink fest that was last Saturday against James Madison. All right, let's take a quick break. I have a futures bet that I'm looking to put into the futures portfolio here on the podcast. Some possible letdown spots as well. We'll get into all of that right here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Tim Murray, Adam Burke with you. As always, please rate, review, and subscribe. The Thursday episode, for those unaware, is on YouTube. I believe that gets posted around sometime on Friday. Over 1,300 views last week, so appreciate that. Keep that rolling. Good to be on YouTube there for that Thursday preview pod. All right, we talked about it. Let's hit it real quickly. Alabama and Georgia facing off this weekend. One of the best games on paper the entire college football season. You could throw an Oregon or Ohio State in there, Texas, Georgia. I wanted to look at it this way. So right now, the favorite to win the Heisman Trophy is Cam Ward from Miami. And I think rightfully so. He's been phenomenal so far. He's plus 450 at DraftKings. Jackson Dart not too far behind. Jalen Milroe, Nico Iamaleava, Dylan Gabriel. The guy I wanted to take maybe a flyer on here, Adam, I'm curious to get your thoughts, because last year you and I both took 30-1 long shots on Bo Nix. If you're new to the program, we updated it very frequently and ultimately did not get to the window. Did have a decent hedge spot laid off late in that process in the Pac-12 championship game. But I'm looking at Carson Beck, and Circa right now has the best number on Carson Beck at 20-1. And Carson Beck, let's be honest, has not gotten off to a stellar start to the year. He's been fine, but for a guy that was thought maybe to be the number one overall pick in the upcoming NFL draft, Adam, has not looked incredible. And he does not have the playmakers that he once had, and Brock Bowers and Ladd McConkey. But it feels like the Kentucky game two Saturdays ago, bye week, it feels like this is the time to buy Carson Beck at 20-1. You're getting the quarterback of the number one power rated team in the country, and they've got a premier matchup ahead of them. And oh, by the way, now I don't know how they will ultimately do through the gauntlet of a schedule, Adam, that Georgia has, but think about the profile spots you have to back Carson Beck if you have a 20-1 ticket. At Alabama, September 28th. At Texas, October 19th. At Ole Miss, November 9th. Home to Tennessee, November 16th. Jalen Milroe, Quinn Ewers, assuming he comes back, Jackson Dart, and Nico. Those are all guys ahead of him currently in the Heisman race. He's got so many opportunities. I don't know if Georgia can run it through clean, but if they do, man, what a good spot. And then, oh, by the way, the SEC championship. So from a profile standpoint, you've got a ton of opportunities. So at 20-1 at Circa, I think it's worth a shot on Carson Beck, who, once again, projected to maybe be the number one overall pick in the NFL draft, on the team with the highest power rating in the country, either one or two, depending on where you have Ohio State. What do you think about Carson Beck at 20-1 to win the Heisman?
So I think the thought process that you're looking at makes sense here. Here's the problem that I have. At Alabama, at Texas, at Ole Miss, how many of those games do they win? Because Beck is not going to have the numbers of the other guys around him, you know, in the Heisman Trophy race. He's not going to have the numbers of a Jackson Dart, because the offense just doesn't run that way at Georgia. He's not going to have the numbers of Nico, who Tennessee may hang 60 on an SEC team here at some point. So that's the problem that I have with it. I think when you look at Carson Beck and you compare it to the preseason number, where it was, what, 7-1, something like that. Yeah, I get it. But the problem that I have is he's probably got to win at least two of those three games, plus beat Tennessee at home, and also have numbers somewhat comparable to the other, you know, one loss, maybe two loss types of guys. So I don't see enough paths for Carson Beck to be able to get it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. If they do go undefeated, which seems unlikely knowing that gauntlet that is out there, but if they go undefeated or 11-1, win the SEC, I think as we've seen with this award, it's kind of been given to the best player on the or the quarterback on the best team. Now, that said, you look at what Cam Ward's been able to do, putting up gaudy numbers each and every week. Will that continue? He utilizes his legs a bunch. So, no, I think at the price for me was just too good to pass up. If he's at 10-1, I'm not betting it. I did stayed away all offseason. You know, my future or my Heisman portfolio, some good, some bad. Nico at 18-1, I'd say that's good. KJ Jefferson at 150-1, I don't think he'll win it, but I guess technically he's like 100-1 now at the shop that I purchased it at, the Westgate Superbook. Kyren Drones, I don't think that one's going to happen, considering they've already lost twice, and one of them was to Vanderbilt. So I'm going to add a little half-unit play on Carson Beck, 20-1, and having Carson Beck and Nico riding through. Don't have Cam Ward, don't have Dylan Gabriel, don't have Jalen Milroe, all of those. But the Heisman, I think, is going to be really interesting this year to see how it all plays out. Let me ask you this real quick.
You know what? I will say this, because this is something that I talked about in the College Football Betting Guide. When you look at the quarterbacks that have won the Heisman over the last several seasons, right? Jaden Daniels last year, 40 passing touchdowns. Caleb Williams, 42. Bryce Young, 47. Joe Burrow, 60 on the best offense we've ever seen. Kyler Murray, 42. Baker Mayfield, 43. Lamar Jackson is the last quarterback to not have 40 passing touchdowns. And obviously he was a legitimate, maybe the best all-time dual threat guy that we've seen during his 2016 season at Louisville. Marcus Mariota, again, a dual threat type of guy, but 40 passing touchdowns. Jameis Winston, 2013, 40 passing touchdowns. Beck's got a long way to go to get to 40, especially with that schedule that he has. And last year, Jaden Daniels won this thing on a three-loss team because he got to that 40 touchdown benchmark, because he was able to contribute, you know, another 10 rushing touchdowns. He had 50 total touchdowns, you know, all of that. I just don't think that Beck can play in that type of field with that kind of vote, given the ground he has to make up and the four top five-ish types of games he's got left.
Yeah, I think, I mean, all that's fair. I think what I'm banking on is that at 20-1, they run the field here. And what are we looking at heading into an SEC championship game? But he's got an uphill battle, no doubt about it, with the schedules out there.
I mean, we don't have time to do the math because we can't do it in real time, but like, what would a rolling parlay of Georgia all the way through pay out?
But does he have to go 12-0? Could he lose?
So.
If they win the SEC, and let's say he loses on the road at Texas, but then gets a revenge in the SEC championship and they're 12-1, I think there's a discussion to be had. Now, once again, Cam Ward can continue his onslaught in a what looks to be pretty shitty ACC, right? So they could be 12-0, 11-1 going into a showdown with Clemson in the ACC championship game. So, you know, it's certainly something to keep a close eye on.
I guess here's the question, right? So I don't know what his price is at Circa. I don't have it in front of me right now. Will Howard, right? Will Howard's 20-1 at DraftKings. Would you rather have Will Howard or Carson Beck?
I'd rather have Carson Beck.
I mean, I guess the question is, like, you know, how much does Ohio State run the football if they're, you know, winning big in all of these games? But I mean,
I think Will Howard, right or wrong, will be docked for the fact that he has what is perceived to be better skill position players in Georgia.
Yeah, I think it's fair. I just
Will Howard,
I mean,
by the way, is 30-1.
But Ohio State also has a much better chance of going undefeated.
Oh yeah, no,
so if your argument is Carson Beck goes undefeated, I mean, yeah, if you do it in the SEC, I mean, yeah, sure,
with that schedule.
But Ohio State has a much better chance of running the table. So that would be an undefeated team with a quarterback who probably has similar numbers to Carson Beck, just with a better chance of getting to the finish line at 13-0.
Yeah. You know, from a profile standpoint, the games are probably a little bit bigger for Alabama, all said. But Ohio State's going to have plenty of big games, right? They go to Oregon. They, of course, play Michigan to close out the year. So those are all big-time games.
They got to play Indiana, too.
It's true.
And they're going to go to Happy Valley. I mean, maybe James Franklin actually figures it out this year. Maybe. In a big game.
Yeah, maybe we maybe if ifs and buts were candy and nuts, the world would be a better place.
It's all right, true.
A couple potential letdown spots. And when I hit Colorado, look, if you want to bet Travis Hunter to win the Heisman Trophy, go ahead, people. It's not happening. I mean, he's awesome. He's going to win the Paul Hornung Award for most versatile player. He's incredible. Like, he is an absolute superstar. But the fact is, Colorado's just not a good enough football team for them to win the Heisman Trophy. And we haven't seen someone, you know, on a losing team, I think, since like the 50s win the Heisman, right? So I don't see it happening with Travis Hunter, but he's awesome. What do you think of this spot for Colorado winning the game as they did, 38-31? Baylor's got to be absolutely kicking themselves every second of the day, allowing Shador Sanders not to have one but two cracks at a Hail Mary that almost, well, the first was almost completed, the second was completed, and then they fumble going into the end zone in the first overtime. So there was a lot of excitement there in Boulder. Now you got to go on the road to UCF. UCF is coming off a bye week, and UCF, man, they could put up some points on you. This defense for Colorado is shaky at best. We've actually seen the market. I was initially thinking of looking to bet UCF here in this spot, but right now the market is 14.5 or better everywhere. This thing opened, Adam, at 11 at Circa and now sits at 15 here on Tuesday. How does Colorado respond after that victory on Saturday night against Baylor?
Yeah, and I think the other thing that you got to keep in mind for this game, too, is it's going to be played down in Orlando, where it's going to be soupy. I mean, it always is, but you got the tropical storm going through the hurricane that's going to be passing west of that part of Florida here throughout the course of the week. So you're going to have a heat index of about 100. It's going to be hot. It's going to be humid. It's going to be gross. And Colorado is a team that they're not deep. You know, they have Shadur and they have Travis Hunter, and that's great, but they're not really a deep team. So coming off of that game against Baylor, now you go to UCF. We're going to have to play in just miserable conditions. This, I think, is a good spot to take UCF here. And I realize that maybe the number is going to be a little bit scary for some people, but not for me. I think it's definitely UCF here in this one.
Yeah, I'm kicking myself, you know, not as much as, you know, Baylor is for allowing a Hail Mary to be caught, but there were 13.5s out there. I did not grab it, and I'm kicking myself now that the market has adjusted north of two touchdowns, but still might find myself on UCF. How about the Iron Skillet over the weekend? The rivalry we never knew we needed, TCU versus the CW, as TCU put out a video kind of crapping on the fact that they were on the CW for their game against SMU. And then SMU goes out there and throws up a 66 spot on their crosstown rival. And the CW put out the final score with the Dawson's Creek theme song in the background. Just didn't know I needed that rivalry. So huge win for SMU. The Iron Skillet, I saw Rhett Lashley put out a tweet of him cooking up eggs in an iron skillet on Sunday morning. SMU is going to be up for Florida State. But you just threw down 66 on your rival. You got that win. It feels like you're back on track. And now here comes Florida State, who gets their first win. It was not pretty whatsoever, but they figure out a way to get it despite being outgained by over 100 yards. What do we think of this spot here where Florida State is catching 6 at SMU on a Saturday night in Dallas?
Rough game because, you know, as you mentioned, I mean, Florida State won, but they didn't look good. They didn't look good at all. And in fact, I downgraded them 1.5 in my power ratings because they just didn't move the football. I mean, DJU continues to look bad in this offense. They have a lot of problems here. That said, I completely agree with you. This spot is miserable for SMU coming off of the rivalry win where, you know, it had been a couple of years since they won, but it had been a very, very one-sided rivalry for a very long time throughout the 2010s, 2000s, and all of that. So it's a tough one. I mean, it's a game that You know, look, here's the really nice thing about college football. Tim, there's a lot of games on the board. You know, you don't have to take them all. And this is a game where, yeah, there are spot considerations. But for me, it's a game I'm staying off of. And I know that it's kind of, you know, your style of handicapping. And Godspeed to you if you're willing to take Florida State in this game.
I have bet on Florida State once this year. It was the Memphis game. I got CLV. There's a big trophy behind me. And that did me absolutely nothing because they lost the game outright as I got them as, I think, a short money line around like minus 140. So we will see there. But Florida State definitely on the consideration card. What about Michigan? Michigan gets a really impressive win. Alex Orji steps in. We talked about this team. What do we do with Michigan? They're taking on Minnesota, lost to Iowa. Market coming in on Minnesota here. It's going to be an early start time there for Michigan. Quick turnaround. I was able to grab 10 earlier this week. It now sits at 9. Is this a tricky spot for Michigan? As you talked about, they can't throw the ball. They're great defensively. Maybe this is an under game where you look at the lowest total. Actually, it's not the lowest total. Second lowest total on the board because Wyoming and Air Force looks like that is a game that nobody should have to watch. 34.5 is the total there. But Minnesota, Michigan, total sitting at 36. Michigan laying 9 here. What do we make of the Wolverines? And I think a little tricky spot.
Yeah, I think this is a bit of a tricky spot for sure. Like I said, I have the game 10, so I don't have any power ratings value per se. But remember, my power rating is just a raw number. It doesn't take into account, you know, I don't do anything in terms of pace statistics or anything like that. I don't make my own totals numbers, which would certainly adjust where my power rating ends up being. You're getting almost 10 points here in a game with a total in the mid-30s where you have a Michigan team that we know cannot throw the football. So it just seems natural to gravitate towards Minnesota in this game where, you know, Minnesota, I think that they've shown some more offensive balance with Max Brosmer at quarterback, where he's a guy who can actually throw a forward pass and do so pretty successfully. They got Darius Taylor back a few games ago, so he's still kind of getting back in the mix here a little bit. The thing that concerns me, though, is what happened last week against Iowa, where Iowa just ran the football straight down their throat, 6 yards per carry, 45 carries, 272 yards. Caleb Johnson, 21 carries, 206. Like, Mullings might just go off in this game. And so that's the worry for me. I can't do it with Minnesota, even though I think there's so many things that make sense, particularly getting a big number with a low total. I can't trust PJ Fleck to row the boat here.
Early start time in Waco, 11 a.m. local. Baylor coming off of the devastating loss a week ago. So you could say they are maybe in a letdown spot. Or are they in a rally the troop spot? BYU, one of 7 teams that is 4-0 ATS. They have the second best cover margin for those 4-0 teams. Shouts to our guy Brad Powers for putting this out on social media. So Baylor, 4-0 ATS, covering by 18.3 points per game. And now they're catching points at home, now, freshly ranked. This is a spot where I think I got to play Baylor here. I'm curious the mindset. Are they in quit mode potentially with Dave Aranda, knowing that he's very much on the hot seat? I think this is a good spot to back Baylor against BYU. Played the late night game. We talked about that BYU game, right, where you get a scoop and score. You get a punt return. You know, I think I saw Parker Fleming, who always, you know, puts up a graph of how well did my team win, and the 38-9 victory, maybe not as indicative of what it was, as it was the, I don't really know how to read his net success ratings chart, but they had the least net success of any team who won in week 4, BYU. The market's starting to bet up Baylor here. I think this is a spot where I gotta back the Bears in what feels like a desperate spot at home with a laying 3 here.
So I have BYU -2.5 in this game. And remember, I gave them a 4-point bump here in my power ratings. So that's, you know, part of the reason why they're in a favorite role for me. Also, Baylor, I gave a 2-point drop. So 6-point swing in this game for me. BYU's a 2.5-point favorite. Market's 3.5. So there you go. Maybe I shouldn't have adjusted either one of those teams at all. But But I had Baylor a road favorite against Colorado last week, and they were one play essentially away from winning the game. So maybe I wasn't that wrong on Baylor, but the Dave Aranda thing just doesn't seem to be working out here. I mean, Baylor has lost a lot of games where it comes down to game management, where it comes down to late game situations and execution, all of that. He's just not a guy that I want to bet on. That said, I've always kind of said that, you know, the line tells a story, right? There's a lot of context in these betting lines that you sometimes have to kind of dig through and figure out and all of that. Everybody knows Baylor's four, or BYU is 4-0. Everybody knows BYU just beat Kansas State by a bunch. But here Baylor is as a 3-point favorite in what appears to be a pretty bad spot. So this may just be one of those games where the line tells the story. And maybe this is one where Baylor is the right side. I mean, they're a pretty clear favorite here, given that home field advantage in college football is not a full 3 points anymore.
Yeah, I think this is a spot that I'm going to be on Baylor here, kind of that desperate spot, laying three, a little stinky line, right? A little fishy. BYU now ranked, fading that fresh new ranking smell. We saw it with Northern Illinois last week. We saw it with Syracuse earlier this year, taking on Georgia Tech, who had been ranked for the first time in 7-8 years. So I think Baylor will probably be a spot for me. We'll do all the letdown spots on Wednesday, but always like to work them out here on the show. All right, a couple things before we get out of here. A quick update on the Owl Watch. How about those Temple Owls beating Utah State? So Kennesaw State, man, you've got some work as Temple picks up a big victory in our showdown of who is going to be the worst Owl program. Kennesaw State 0-3, and now Temple 1-3. Those pesky Owls, maybe they're feisty this weekend against, or this Thursday against Army.
Yeah, you know, I thought long and hard about this game because, I mean, I have it line 10.5. So definitely a little bit below where the market is, not crossing any important numbers, anything of significance, anything like that. But Temple looks a lot better than I thought they would here coming into the season. In fact, they were one of my bigger upgrades. I gave them a 3-point bump, you know, here in advance of this week's game. And if I hadn't given them a 3-point bump, my number would be 13.5. So I guess we'll find out if it's worth it, you know, taking a look at Temple. But man, I will say this, you know, there were some things I was right about. There were some things I was wrong about here for this college football season. Hating on Florida Atlantic, I was very right about, because man, they're terrible. And Tom Herman's going to get fired. And it's a weird place, right? Because Florida has elite high school football, as we know, but I don't know how much guys really want to go to Boca Raton. So man, I think it's a pretty fascinating situation here with Florida Atlantic going forward. But when you get pumped like that by UConn, you got major problems with your program.
Have you ever seen a box score like we saw on Saturday? Penn State, Kent State. Kent State got outgained 718-66. I repeat, 718-66. They have now been outscored in their last two games. Carry the one. Hold on. 127-0. Is this the worst team in college football by margin?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, they are horrible. I mean, we kind of saw a box score like that a week ago, where Tennessee outgained them 740-112, and that was a 65-0 game at halftime. So, yeah, Kent State is easily the lowest power-rated FBS team I've had at this stage of the season here. Eastern Michigan's not really anything to write home about, and they're a big favorite against Kent State here. So, yeah, Kent State is really, really bad, and I may not even have them bad enough because I'm about 3 points off market in that game.
They've played three FBS opponents, Pittsburgh, Tennessee, and Penn State. 55-24, 71-0, 56-0, and oh, by the way, lost to the mighty Red Flashes of St. Francis as well.
Speaking of by the way, Pitt might be good.
Yeah.
Like, Pitt might be really good. They've figured this thing out on offense. I know it was a little bit fluky the way that they beat Cincinnati And then, of course, winning the backyard brawl coming from behind in the final 3 minutes of the game. But they might be pretty good. And they get North Carolina here on October 5th, where North Carolina, if they lose to Duke this week after giving up 70 to James Madison, that might be a really good spot to take Pitt on the road in Chapel Hill on October 5th, coming off of a bye.
Yeah, and North Carolina, once again, a game that I am eyeing. All right, before we get out of here, full breakdown of the card, of course, coming out on Thursday's podcast. A game that I am super excited for this week, and I was happy that the situational angle came home with San Jose State last week against Washington State in a crazy game. Washington State had a 52-yard field goal to force overtime. They win in double OT. On the Smurf turf, late night, you know I love my late night games, FS1, 10 p.m. How about Boise State, freshly ranked, taking on Washington State? Market's betting up Boise State a little bit here in this spot. I don't know if this total can get high enough. I took some over, and you know me, Adam, I don't like to bet overs all that often, but this game has the makings for an absolute late night shootout. Wazoo and John Mateer. This dude is incredibly fun to watch. Ashton Jeanty, maybe the best running back in college football. Both of these defenses are worrisome at best. So it's a great week. Notre Dame, Louisville this week. Obviously, Alabama taking on George is the headliner. But I think Washington State, Boise State for you late night folks, that's a really fun one to watch.
Yeah, I think so, too. There's a few that I like here. 2.5s are gone now, but I like Rutgers on Friday night against Washington. I think Washington has problems with the physicality. Also, very, very long trip, short week. I like Rutgers in that spot there. I got to do it, man. I got to take Louisiana Monroe against Troy. I've liked the Warhawks a lot throughout the course of this season, in the lead up to the season. It's down to a touchdown now. We've seen some movement, I think, as we've been doing the show here. It seems like maybe somebody giving out Louisiana Monroe with some, you know, pretty big market influence. But I have this game line at 4.5. It was 8.5 early in the week. That's one that I took on Sunday there as the numbers were coming out. And then, man, I got to do it. I got to take Sam Houston State this week. I know it's scary against Texas State, a Texas State team under G.J. Kinney that's been really dynamic offensively, but Sam Houston State's been a riser in my power ratings. They've been a team taking a lot of money here throughout the last few weeks. I think over a touchdown is a little bit too much in that neutral site game at Energy Stadium. One last thing, because I'm a weather nerd. Hurricane Helene, at least going to be soon Hurricane Helene, coming up through the Gulf. The current storm track puts it in the Illinois-Indiana area for Saturday early. So keep an eye in the market for games like UMass and Miami of Ohio to move, Akron and Ohio to move on the total, and then Nebraska and Purdue. Haven't seen it yet because the storm track is a little bit weird. It has the storm kicking back west when it gets toward the Great Lakes Midwest region. Typically doesn't work out that way, but keep an eye on that because there will be some totals that have a chance at moving here where the weather is not going to be awful, but you're going to have 25-mile-per-hour, 30-mile-per-hour gusts. And that will be enough to impact the total.
Yeah, Maryland, Indiana, another game that I'm curious about too. Maryland catching a full 7 there against Kirk Cignetti and the cover machine that is the Indiana Hoosiers. And I know our colleague Wes Reynolds pretty fired up about his beloved alma mater and their performance. And I see in our VSiN email that he laid the 6.5 with his alma mater there, laying 6.5 with that Indiana. So for me, I'm going to go in on Baylor. That'll be an official play right now at 3, minus 15 right now at DraftKings. Hopefully get a flat 3 at some point, but I'm going to roll with Baylor. That'll be an early bet in addition to the Carson Beck 20-1 long shot. Adam, as always, appreciate it. At Skating Tripods, where you can find him on social media. You can see him doing hits all throughout the week on VSiN and read all his columns over at VSiN.com. And worth noting, I want to plug it real quickly, freshly minted, our NHL betting guide is now out.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's a solo write from me front to back. All 32-team previews. We do have 32 teams this year. The Utah Hockey Club, they are the former Arizona Coyotes. So we got 32 teams this year, and I got some best bets in there. I got some Stanley Cup futures stuff in there. And like I said, previews of all 32 teams. So if you're an NHL fan, or even if you're not, do me a favor, download that. Check out our 2024 NHL betting guide exclusively for VSiN Pro subscribers.
Rate, review, and subscribe. Let's keep the momentum rolling. Once again, you can catch the Thursday podcast on our YouTube channel as well, youtube.com/VSiN Live. For Adam Burke, I'm Tim Murray. We'll talk to you later this week right here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.